From UCB Comedy Studios, this is the UCB Digital Podcast. I'm Nate Russell. Hey, everybody. Welcome back. We got another great episode for you today. Thank you so much for taking the time and tuning in. Alden Ford is our guest. If you've been around UCB anytime in the last 10 years, you know Alden. And we'll get into all of his credits, but he does everything. He's a director, an editor, an actor, a writer. If there's something to be done in production and comedy, he does it, and excited to chat with him. Also excited to chat with you, Ben Hosley. Hey, Ben.
Hey, Nate.
Ben is here. Everybody, this is Ben's last episode on this show.
Yeah, it's sad. I mean, I've saw this through from the very first episodes, yeah. Where we had some great panels with Key and Peele writers.
That's right.
The folks behind Weekend Update.
Yes. For those who don't follow that intensely, Ben is not just leaving this show. Ben's leaving UCB. He's moving on to a new position in the podcasting world. We wish you all the best of luck, Ben, and thanks for the 3 years you put in building this network and doing all the hard work you've done around here. So really appreciate that, man.
Thank you, Nate.
We'll be excited to track your career. Maybe you can join the Career Tracker.
Yeah.
I'm thinking about Career Tracker right now because we're back recording episodes. Maybe that's why you're jumping off, Ben, because we're in a week where we're heavily recording Career Tracker episodes. But
there's no coincidence.
Yeah, right. We're excited to sort of jump back into it. If you didn't listen to our previous Career Tracker episode, it's back in the archives a few weeks. A new episode's coming out. We're going to track them at week 7. We'll have that ready to launch the first week of June. But we're going to check back in with these folks because a lot's happened between then and now. We posted a link to Mehdi. Mehdi had a great quote. He had Time Out New York give him some great press. Ben, did you see that? It was his show Passport Control, which on the last Career Tracker, he said he's going to have in meetings for television within 6 months or else he's canceling the whole show.
Yes, I remember that. I did see the press, I have faith in Mehdi. He's a hustler.
He is.
I know he's going to make something happen.
The quote, if anybody didn't see it, was, "This show does The Daily Show better than The Daily Show." Woo, that's high praise.
That is.
So we'll check in with Mehdi and see about that. And also, I also just saw, because we're here in New York and you sometimes run across it, the NYU graduation is going on. So that means our good friend Ben Marshall is out of school and maybe moving to Australia. So we'll happy to check in about that too, man. Really excited to see what changes happen in his life. All that's coming up in a couple of weeks. So stay tuned for that and follow along at UCB Digital on Twitter and UCB Digital Podcast on Facebook for all the updates with our Career Tracker folks. Excited to check in with our LA friends as well in a couple of weeks. All right, let's jump into today's episode. Alden Ford is our guest today. Alden is one of three directors that's part of the director trio. Triumvirate, Jetpacks Go, along with Justin Tyler and Bobby Webster. They have directed scripted and non-scripted television for Comedy Central, MTV, MTV2, Fuse, Nickelodeon, and Fox Sports 1, as well as all sorts of branded content and content all over the internet. Alden is also the longtime host of the Gentrify Show and former podcast here at UCB. The Gentrify Show every Friday at 10:30 at UCB East, a variety show of epic proportions. I talked to him about that in this show back when it was started as Gentrify Brooklyn, a sort of indie show at the Brooklyn Lyceum out there in Park Slope or Gowanus. Or I don't know what neighborhood you describe that as. I guess that's Park Slope, right, Ben?
Yeah, South Slope.
Yeah, somewhere out there. But then migrated to the UCB East when that opened 6 years ago and has been hosting it ever since. He's also a former member of the digital team Vex Video, which is our animation team here at UCB a couple years back. And he's also a former member of the comedy trio Sidecar, who had a great run of live shows and pilots and video content all around the New York scene. Gotta be on the better part of 6 or 7 years ago at this point. Actually, they were the folks, one of the folks who started the Gentrify Show. That was originally a Sidecar production. But we were basically focusing today's conversation, talking to Alden about his development as a director primarily. He's somebody who came to the business and came to New York seeing himself as an actor first and has definitely migrated more towards a directing track as the sort of career around him has happened and he's built something that he's really passionate about. We also wanted to talk to him about working in a directing trio. I'd never heard of a directing trio before. And so we talked to him about that. We talked about how does that sort of get divided up and what are the benefits, what are the downsides, and how do they make it work? Because they're doing a lot of different types of work. They're working together extensively. So how do you balance all that? So really excited to talk about all that stuff. Let's jump right into it. We also enjoyed a Bronx Banner Ale while we had our conversation. The Bronx Banner, of course, their flagship beer, a Kolsch-inspired ale brewed using Belgian, Pilsner, American wheat malts, and classic Bavarian hops. Check one out. This one is absolutely available all the time down at the UCB East Bar. And go to www.thebronxbrewery.com to see all the craft beers that Bronx has to offer. And thanks to Bronx for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. All right, time to jump into it. Our conversation with Alden Ford. Alden Ford is here. Welcome, Alden. Cheers.
Cheers.
We're drinking that Bronx Banner Ale.
Bronx Banner. The Bronx Brewery is a favorite of mine.
You do a show at UCB East every week.
Yeah, I have Bronx. I have a Bronx beer probably every week.
Yeah. I've been saying this one is, I think, my favorite.
Do they have this on tap now?
They have this one down there at UCB East right now in a can. Mm. They do this seasonal on tap usually.
It's a fine, easy ale.
Yeah. No, I could see
right
sort of like, that is what it is. But I could sort of see this, you know, summertime barbecue.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, this is
backyard
a real
drink, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Pretty good.
This is, if there was a hot dog burning right now, it would be perfect.
Well, we'll work on that.
Okay, great. Thank you.
So, well, let's start there. Gentrify. You guys have been doing that for what, 20 years?
Give or take. I'd say it's maybe like 18 years. I started in third grade.
Yeah.
No, it is a really long show. It's been crazy to see how things, how that show has changed and how it has not changed at all.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's a really fun show to do. I think my favorite thing about the show, besides, you know, my co-hosts, is just that I think that it's always been a show that's been kind of in a happy place of between a show that's so popular that we have a lot of people, you know, asking to do the show who we've never met or never heard of or no one can vouch for, and a show where we're always, you know, hitting the street to try to get people to do the show, which I think is a problem with a lot of other shows that we've had to book in the past and other shows that I've done and seen. And so I think it's cool to be in a position and have been in a position for a while where it has a reputation that draws people who are like established comics and established, you know, sketch comedians and stuff. But it's enough to keep the show booked up solid for, you know, a while in advance. But we don't also have to run a lot of interference with people who don't get what the show is and who might not connect with the audience and stuff like that.
I remember going to those shows and like doing the show in Brooklyn. Yeah. I think that was where I first met you.
Yeah. And that's one of the ways that the change from Brooklyn to UCB East has been the way that it has changed by far the most. But sorry, continue.
No, I just remember that show being such a cool event.
Yeah.
Right. And all part of it was that space was so awesome.
Right.
And you guys were great bookers.
Yeah.
And it also just felt like there was a lot of like love and support in that room.
Yeah.
Which is like, that was could be a very cold room.
It's interesting that there was, well, I think we got lucky by doing it at a time where I think the comedy community at that time was small enough still that there was a room's worth full of people who, on any given Friday night, wanted to come out in Brooklyn, not get on the train, and come see a great show. And so it was a lot of people who we knew already and a lot of people who, you know, were at UCB two or three times during the week and on the weekend were like, hey, I'm just going to go to the Lyceum instead, which was great. And now I think, you know, obviously having a weekend show at the Beast, it's a little bit – I mean, you know, I'm sure you guys know as well with Bucky, like having that show – the crowd changes a lot when you go from you know, from one venue to another, from one time slot to another.
Sure.
And so now it's a lot more people who are just, you know, seeing a show. They're just came to see any show.
Right.
And it's great. It's always a really good crowd, but it's, I miss it being like, you know, 75% comedians who were, you know, just there.
It was also a party.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We used to do a dance party after every. That seems sort of forced now that I think about it. Like, if we tried to do that at Gentrify at the Beast, I feel like it wouldn't take.
No.
But it felt so organic at the time. Because I think it was that. Like, everybody was no more than a degree away from each other.
Yeah, and that's also why it felt like it was like you after a little while you knew that's what you were getting into with that show too.
Yeah.
And so it didn't feel forced. It felt like it was like, "Oh, I'm opting into this whole experience."
Yeah.
And that's sort of the love I was talking about. It felt like a very like loving room.
That was really nice. We've tried to do, you know, we've thought and talked a lot about that in the last couple of years of like, "Man, we should try to do one of those." We used to do this thing called Camp Harold Night.
Did you
ever do that show?
Yeah. I wrote a song for that show.
Oh, really? Oh my God! I feel terrible that I don't remember that. I probably can you hum a few bars? I probably
I don't remember that.
That was so much fun because we did. I think it was an improv set, a non-Herald improv set, like a 7-minute set by every single Herald team on Herald Night, and that was so much fun. We made T-shirts.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was a really great time.
Because you've been in this community since, like, what it says on your bio is 2005.
Yeah.
Around here.
Yeah, that's when I started taking classes.
Yeah.
And I guess that doesn't seem like that long to me, because I feel like when I got here, it was already such a bustling community.
Sure.
Like, I don't have, you know, I can't say what a lot of people, you know, I don't remember the old space. It was after they'd already moved to Chelsea.
Right.
But now that I think about it, I was like, no, we were still like at Shetler and Champions for all the classes. Mm-hmm. And the theater was the only place where, you know, you would actually, that was the only place that the theater actually had.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's, you know, I mean, having been out of the sort of school system for a little while, it's, you know, I know that it's changed, but I'm not seeing it as much firsthand.
You're more removed from it.
Yeah,
that makes sense. And I also think that in the last couple of years specifically, the explosion has been so exponential.
Crazy. Yeah.
That it's really easy to feel disconnected from that
growth
because you sort of have found your place inside of it, your niche inside of it. You've got that show.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think about that a lot, though. I think about what my, you know, what it would have been like if I hadn't done Gentrify, for example, or if I hadn't been working with, you know, Fisher and Justin Tyler on Sidecar at the time. Like, if I had just kept doing the grind of, like, you know, doing classes and practice teams and getting on a Herald team, which may not have ever happened, let's be honest. But I wonder what that trajectory would have looked like. But it was kind of nice to kind of take the detour and kind of go and, you know, and work with a team and then Gentrify and all that stuff. It's been kind of interesting. But you know, the downside is it's kind of taken me out of the thick of it.
Yeah. I mean, but you're doing well.
Yeah.
You have a life for yourself. You're an accomplished man.
I appreciate that.
Well, here's my question. So I guess how this all like connects is, so you're a young man out of Alaska.
Yeah.
You go to college. You get a theater degree. You move to New York. You get involved here pretty quickly, right? Were you an actor at first, or where did the sort of media production skills come in for you?
Well, you know, the theater degree. I had a theater degree from Whitman College, and I did improv there. And when I moved to New York, a friend of mine was like, "You should take classes at UCB." And I was sort of like, at the time, I kind of remember thinking about improv. And this is back when, you know, it's like, I don't know what college improv groups are like now. The college improv group at my college is now like a long form. They tour. They do festivals. They're like serious. But at the time, we were like, it was like short form. We did World's Worst and all that shit. And it was fun. It was super fun. But I kind of always thought of it as something like a cappella, where like when you leave college, you're sort of done doing that.
Sure.
For
a lot of people, that is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, and probably for the best. But a friend of mine was like, "You got to take classes at UCB," because he had done them. And I was like, okay. And I just had no idea, you know. And it was, I think there was something, you know, there's something really kind of cool about coming to that as an adult and not ever really know. And now I think it's popular enough that I think if I was 10 years younger.
Yeah.
I would never have not known anything about long-form improv, you know? And so, like, coming to New York and being like, oh, adult is a strong word. I was 22, but I was, like, coming to New York and being like, oh, here's this whole different thing that I was, like, barely scratching the surface of for 4 years and really thought I had fucking unlocked that shit all the way. And, like, realizing no, that was not at all what I was doing.
Where did media, because when I look on your website, your website lists you director, writer, actor.
Right.
Right. And I know that you're doing all that stuff.
Yeah.
I saw you in a what is this, the insurance commercial.
Yeah. Yeah.
During the NCAA tournament. Your face is all over
the career.
Thing.
Yeah, yeah, nationwide.
But actor has become third on that list as how you portray yourself.
Yeah.
Where did that happen? Because it sounds like you came in to New York and to this community as an actor.
Right. Yeah, and I guess I sort of did. I think that the way that I kind of always thought about it when I was in college was, you know, I didn't have a lot of experience doing anything but theater because there wasn't, you know, obviously any kind of industry up in Alaska. And, there was sort of a burgeoning film program at my college. But I really was interested, and I was really interested in sketch comedy. I was really interested in film. And so there was a little bit to do there, but you pretty much had to do everything yourself. Like there wasn't any kind of infrastructure. I mean, certainly not people-wise, but there was also not much in terms of equipment. So, you know, it was like I got a pirated copy of Photoshop and Premiere, and I was like, you know, I kind of had to figure out every single thing I wanted to do. I didn't know how to do it. So it was kind of the thing where I got to the point, and this was even in college, but it continued to be true after I started doing sketch comedy here, was I just ended up, you know, learning to do everything kind of piecemeal. And after a while, I kind of realized that I didn't really know anybody else who knew how to do that.
Sure.
And it kind of just became this, especially the path that I took with editing specifically, was that I had just edited all the stuff we'd ever done. So I didn't have a list of people who I could call if I needed to edit things. And so that was sort of, you know, it was sort of sad on one hand, but it was also nice because it allowed me to be a little more self-reliant in terms of that stuff and get stuff out and finished and, you know, into the world without having to, you know, reach out to a lot of people about it. So I think the reason it kind of came about, I mean, I always was interested in directing and I always liked the idea of being a director, but I didn't have a lot of I didn't have any idea how to do it. The college I went to was very the staff there was good.
Sure.
It was well funded. But there wasn't a lot of real world experience current real world experience among anyone at the school. All the teaching staff there had spent, you know, a decade acting professionally, but it was in like the 70s.
Sure.
So they were like, yeah, I think I have a pretty good idea of what you should be doing. But so I left with a lot of like sort of performance skill, but not a lot of professional context at all.
Sure.
So I think, you know, moving here and wanting to do stuff and having no idea how to even get into that world, you know, that was something that kind of, I think it created kind of a restlessness that kind of spawned a lot of that other stuff that was like, fuck it, I'm just going to edit this myself, or I'm going to learn, you know, how to do all these different things that I probably wouldn't have learned to do if I had known people who were able to do it.
Sure.
So I'm kind of glad for that. It was, but it ended up, you know, in the long run, kind of ended up this sort of glacial pace for a lot of the stuff that I've done. You know, it's like my aspirations to act when I moved to the city really slowed down because I ended up doing other stuff. And then like, you know, that started to pick up a little bit, but then I started directing and editing more exclusively. And then my acting took a backseat to that. And then, you know, and the same thing has gone with my writing as well, is that, you know, I used to write a little bit more. And now that I'm directing and editing a lot of stuff, you know, I have less time to write and less energy to do it and stuff like that. You know, my own stuff.
Sure.
So, you know, I mean, I've always been happy to have those things take the place of one another, as long as it's kind of moving in a direction that feels good, either professionally or creatively or whatever. And so I haven't ever really missed it too much, except in kind of the philosophical sense of like, should I have just done one thing for a long time? And would that have gotten me further than I am today, you know?
Is it, I mean, in your, like, maybe this is a hard question to answer, but in your like heart of hearts, right, of those three sort of tracks for yourself, which is the one that you are like, do you feel like you're a director now?
Yeah.
And that is the,
I do.
The path.
Yeah. Directing is sort of the thing for me, I think. And I think, you know, I think I have, more to say as a director than I think I have to say as a writer or a performer.
Is there any moment in the path where you feel like there was a click that shift happened? Is there a project that maybe was inspired by, or was it so gradual that it's impossible to break it down?
It was pretty gradual. I mean, I think a lot of it was that I didn't know enough about the professional end of directing that it hadn't really occurred to me. Mm-hmm. It would sort of be like, would you rather be a comedian or a professional baseball player or something? It's like, well, that would be great, but I don't know what that path looks like at all.
Sure.
And so I think it was just that I didn't know the mechanics of how to get to the point where anybody would ask me to direct anything. But I mean, after doing it a little bit and kind of actually getting some professional experience doing it, I mean, it's definitely where I feel like my skill set lies. Because I think I like performing. I like working with performers, and I like I usually have a pretty good idea of what I want things to be or to look like, but I often can't do it as a performer myself. And a lot of that is just experience. You know, a lot of it, I think, I'm not sure if I would have ever really hit a wall as an actor. It's just that I never got to that point, and the directing stuff kind of took over. And then I realized, like, oh, this is so much more, this appeals to my, like, micromanagey kind of, like, perfectionist sensibilities so much more than acting does. And of course, you know, there are plenty of very, meticulous actors who can dig super deep into that stuff. And I would love to do that at some point as well. But, I think when you're starting out, especially like doing, in the comedy community, there's only so much if you're going to be if you're in a sketch group or if you're in an improv group or if you're an independent filmmaker or something like that and you're acting, a lot of the time you're relying on a lot of other people to give you a platform to do something that you can really sink your teeth into.
Sure.
And I think as a director, there's a little bit more, or at least I've felt in my experience, like there's a little bit more of an opportunity for me to be like, there's not much here, but I'm going to make this thing into whatever it is.
Sure.
And kind of make it a bigger part of, make it a bigger priority for me as a director to kind of like draw this thing out that I think is really important. I don't know if that makes sense.
No, that does make sense. It also seems like some of the evolution, as these like roles sort of like shift in their priority happened in some of your collaboration, right?
Right.
Because like we were talking a little bit before about Sidecar.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's worth like stopping there because that was you guys were a very popular sketch team and Tina did a lot of different stuff. I remember like when I was sort of like first getting into this community, you guys seemed very sort of like established and senior in that sort of like indie comedy like world. You had that show, one NYTVF.
Right.
Like you were doing shows at UCB. Like it felt like you guys were busy and working together on a talent side.
Right.
Right? You guys were the talent there too.
Yeah. Well, the New York Television Festival thing that we did, actually talking about the switch between performing and directing, I would say that was one big one. The first time we entered New York Television Festival, we had this director help us out, John Kingman, super nice dude. Mm-hmm. And we had written a script that was for the three of us. And he directed it and he edited it as well. And it was great. It was super fun. But like we needed his help so badly because we didn't know any of the – the ins and outs of the, actually putting together a production and making something look better than, all the YouTube videos we had done at that point. YouTube, which I think started in 2005, if that's correct.
It's in that ballpark, 2005, 2006.
It's insane to realize that didn't exist at some point, that there was a time when you had to just put video files up and send people links in the email. And that was how you got the word out.
Yeah,
about
it is pretty wild.
Yeah. So we did that one, and then the next year we really were like, we're going to put in a little more time, put in a little more energy, and a little more money, and really try to make this something that looks killer. And so I was like, we came up with this great idea, and I was like, this really should be for Matt and Justin. Like, this is the perfect roles for them. Like, they really interact well together. And so I kind of took the lead in directing that. And I think that would constitute a pretty big shift for me because I'm not in that at all. And it ended up being something that really people liked a lot and was really fulfilling to me as well. Like I didn't miss not being in that at all. Miss being in that. I hate that phrase. I didn't miss being in it at all. And I was really glad that it came together and that people really enjoyed it, because it really made me feel like, oh, this is a good place for me to be. Yeah. And I don't have to, you know, I don't feel like I'm giving up one thing for sure. This other thing.
What were you doing? What were you doing professionally at that time? If you weren't making money as a director, what were you doing? Was it mostly editing work?
At
or
that,
were you
no, actually,
doing
at that
day
time,
jobs.
At that time, I was a headshot photographer.
Okay,
That was part of, you know, that was part of this decision I made right when I moved to the city, that I wasn't going to do something that didn't have anything to do with my career. Mm-hmm. And even though headshot photography is not super close to what I wanted to be doing, I was like, I'm going to still be involved in the industry. Sure. I'm going to be, I had really been interested in photography at that time. And I was like, this is a good way to kind of, you know, hone my, technical skills a little bit with a camera. So it helps the things that I shoot as well, video wise. And so, yeah, I that was what I was doing pretty much full time from like 2006 through 2010 or 11.
Mm-hmm.
And then that kind of phased out as I got more and more directing and editing work.
Cool. Did that New York Television Festival thing start to, was that something that opened some doors, or was that?
As it turned out, not really.
Yeah.
It was kind of, it was the kind of thing that I think more than anything else, it really just made it clear to the three of us that we were on the right track.
Sure.
I want to say that was like the second or third year that they had done it. It was pretty new at that time, that festival. And so I think there weren't quite as many like industry eyes on it as there are these days.
Sure.
But I think it was the first time where we were like, oh my God, this is really like, you know, we made something that is way better than anything we'd made before. And it was something that really pointed towards the kinds of things we could be pushing ourselves to do more of.
Yeah.
And it was in the end something that we were like, this didn't actually, you know, the difference between what we were doing for nothing, between just the three of us and the things that we were, this thing, it wasn't that great a difference. Ultimately, it was like, now we have the skill set and kind of the toolkit to be able to do 80% of that without spending anything. And so that made it a little bit easier for us to then go make a little, some more kind of ambitious sketch comedy and stuff like that, in terms of making it a little more genre heavy and like a little more editing heavy and mm-hmm. directing heavy and involving more people and crew that were interested in what we were doing.
Yeah.
So, and before that, it had literally just been, you know, us shooting something in one of our apartments with a camcorder, and it was something that we would have put on stage, but it was between shows or whatever.
Is this roughly in the same time? So the time period that you guys transition between the sort of like sidecar being the main sort of like
right.
collaborative, and you've got a long background of three-person collaborative environments.
Yeah, that's true.
But so the transition that goes between sidecar, which feels like it is talent, sort of like actor at the head of it.
Yeah, performer heavy, I would say. Yeah.
Writer sort of in the middle of it. Director starts
exactly.
to trend.
And I think that was true for all three of us. I mean, I think when we started, and that was, I think, one of the things that made that kind of a soft transition
mm-hmm.
was that it was kind of, we all went into it as guys who liked improv and had improvised together and were interested in, in starting to write a little bit more. And then, of course, as we stopped improvising quite as much together and started doing more and more sketch.
Yep.
And then that gave way to kind of us splitting up our roles a little bit more within the group. And then, of course, after we stopped working together, that kind of we each kind of continued going in that same direction.
And the transition between that and Jetpacks Go,
right?
Which is kind of like there's like a little break and then sort of like a new entity, right?
Yeah.
Which is your directing, just to be clear, that's a directing trio.
I mean,
that you're a participant.
Yeah. So it's basically, I mean, I think professionally we're more of a directing trio. But in the comedy world or in like the sort of, the stuff we do on our own that is not, you know, branded content or whatever,
mm-hmm.
that tends to be more of a production company because we can kind of each do a bunch of stuff.
Cool.
So, you know, it's like if we're doing something, if we're doing a sketch or something, we'll each do two or three different things. But, if somebody hires us to do a commercial, we're usually just directing it. as a trio. But yeah, I mean, I think that that was something that, you know, the transition to that came about. Bobby, who is our third, the third member of Jetpacks with me and Justin Tyler, he had actually shot Illuminati Brothers, which was our New York Television pilot. And he was so much fun to work with, and he filled in so many blanks that the three of us in Sidecar had in our training and our background. Mm-hmm. And we, I think, filled in a couple blanks for him as well, because he didn't come up in the comedy world at all. He was just a guy who was a really talented director and DP. And so it was really natural for the four of us to work together really well, and we all really enjoyed working together. And then after Sidecar stopped working together, we kept Bobby, Justin and I kept working with Bobby, and that kind of slowly turned into Jetpacks Go as we started booking more actual professional directing work.
How do you start to book jobs as a three-person directing team?
That's a good question. I don't know. I don't know how it happened. Our first actual professional directing job was a commercial that we did, and it was we had gotten connected with an ad agency that had hired us like a year earlier. Justin and I, as a comedy duo, to be in this branded web series that they were working on. And so then they were like, hey, we have this creative that we need some comedy guys to work on.
Sure.
And we had already shot a couple things at that point with Bobby at that time. So we had him kind of looped in, and we needed to kind of establish an entity to get all the payments through and, you know, to pay all our crew and stuff like that. So it kind of became this kind of de facto production company. And then as we started moving towards things that were, you know, kind of a step above that, where we weren't expected to hire all the PAs and buy lunch and all that stuff, that we were just the directors, then that kind of narrowed our scope a little bit, and now we're really just directing as a team. But a lot of the other stuff that we do, if you know, like I said, sketches and short films and stuff that we've done, have been sort of back a little bit to what we started as, which is we can all do two or three different things.
Sure. So if it's something for yourselves, it's a little more segmented,
right?
And if it's something that is just sort of like selling yourselves into a directing job,
right,
you're sort of like tackling that together.
Yeah, and I think that that's the thing about the trio. It's a little bit weird. I think directing duos have only really been accepted in our culture in the last 5 or 10 years with the Coen brothers and the Wachowskis and whatnot.
Sure.
Not to compare myself to either of those two groups of people, that would be incredibly ridiculous. But yeah, so I think the idea of having three directors, I think, is a little bit weird, especially in the branded world where everybody's kind of inside the box about everything a lot of the time. But I think a lot of people are excited by the fact that we're sketch guys and that we came up in the comedy world. And so I think that kind of justifies it, because I think they think of us as kind of a sketch team that's kind of driving every aspect of the boat a little bit.
So take me through like a recent example of a branded or commercial project that you've done where you guys are collaborating in that way. How does the director's responsibilities break out in a three-person environment?
Yeah. Well, one of the really nice things is that a lot of the time it ends up being a pretty clean three-way split.
Mm-hmm.
We had a job that we did last week, actually. And one of the things about us being a three-person team is that the higher the level of the production, sort of the harder it is for us to do anything else. Like, for example, this job last week was a DGA job, and Bobby usually is our DP. He's sort of a DP slash co-director. But, of course, it was a union shoot. So, and Bobby's not in the cinematographer's union. So the idea of us being like, well, you should waiver us into the DGA because we're also not yet DGA. The idea of, like, you should waiver the three of us into the DGA and also Bobby also union DP. That felt like a bridge too far little bit. So it makes it a little bit more necessary that we're really just splitting the roles of our director three ways. But I guess in answer to your question, you know, it's nice that we have these different skill sets, because we'll write up a treatment, usually based on their creative or their script or something, and we kind of pitch them on how we would do it. And one of the nice things is we can say, hey, look, Bobby is at NYU. He has a master's in film from NYU. He's shot all these different features. He shot this Oscar-winning short film. And he's directed these different things as well. And then, of course, Justin is working constantly at, True TV and Viacom as a writer. And I'm also going to be there. So the three of us, but having the three of us be able to kind of to split those things is nice, because it really ends up translating to less work for the three of us. Bobby usually works on storyboards and shot lists, and I'm usually working on, creative stuff like, I'll work on casting, I'll work on the treatment. I work on kind of assembling the treatment in a way that sort of reflects the visual style we're kind of going for. Mm-hmm. And then Justin will work on punching up jokes and all that stuff in the script. And so we really kind of put our skill sets to work as much as we can. And then on set, it's nice because on a commercial set, you really do have a lot of different things to do at once. And so splitting that is nice. Like a lot of the time I'll be working with actors. Justin will be running interference with the client who's usually in another room kind of sending us notes,
which can be
fine, but it can be also a huge handful. So having a person who's dedicated only to just being like, managing the client and distilling those notes and relaying them to us on set is great. And then a lot of the time Bobby will be working alongside the DP, or sometimes he'll be operating.
Be the DP.
Yeah. So I mean, the stuff that I've directed on my own, you lean on those people a little bit more for stuff like that. You lean on the writer, or you lean on the AD or the DP a little bit more to kind of give you that input. But it all depends. But there is not a whole lot of crossover in terms of outside of the sort of kernel of creative decisions, we do end up finding a lot of logistical stuff that we can do, that each of the three of us can do and take care of on our own. And it really makes the whole thing run a lot more smoothly.
And how does that delineation differentiate on a project that's a little bit more internal to your company, right? Like you did a project recently, like with UCB.
Yep.
Where you guys have a new IFC thing?
Yes.
And that's you guys yourselves?
Yeah. Well, we had an IFC show that we did with Jenny Jaffe, who wrote and starred in it. And it was really fun. And that was a good example of the kind of thing where, I edited it. Justin helped with the script. Bobby worked on a lot of the, he crewed up and got all of the, the camera stuff in order and worked through the shot list. And so in that way, it was pretty similar. But, I think we really, the conversation's a little bit different with commercial stuff, because with original stuff, you really have to kind of, you really have to defer to each other a little bit more in terms of saying like, well, this is what this thing is going to be about. And if there's any, if you're shooting something for Oreos or something, like, it's pretty clear what the client wants that thing to be.
Sure.
And so the three of us get on the same page immediately about what that is. But when it's sort of like, what's the funniest way for this character to present themselves, or what's the funniest version of this joke, or what's the best angle or take for this specific scene?
Yeah.
It's a little bit more subjective, and you really kind of have to you really need to be a lot more sensitive to each other in that sense. And to a certain extent, for better or worse, it ends up being your redundancies add up a little bit more. Mm-hmm. There's a little bit more where it's kind of like, well, I guess it's my word against yours as to whether this is the best direction to go with this. And so we find that it's a little bit easier for us to kind of, I think that it's a little easier for us to do branded stuff as that trio. And when we do stuff that's this thing that we did through UCB, this pilot presentation we did, Justin wrote that and he was in it. So he didn't direct it. And it actually took the load off of the three of us a lot, I think, because Justin didn't have to worry about the big picture stuff. Yeah. And Bobby and I were able to kind of, then it was just two voices in the room rather than three.
Sure.
And so I think in that sense, it really works well, because there's not, you end up with diminishing returns, I think, when it comes to stuff that really benefits from having a single voice.
Yeah. And also it seems like in that circumstance, that's more of you, like, if that's a project that's a little bit more organic to his creative, like, because he wrote that, right?
Right, right. Like, and it's sort of, semi, it's about a a world that he's a little familiar with.
So you're sort of like, again, you're like sort of being there to, like in a collaborative way,
right,
on a project that's like, you're sort of, you know, you're helping each other out on a project that's a little more of a creative vision that one of you is sort of like spearheading, which is nice. That you've already got the working relationship. I'm sure the shorthand of that works a lot faster because you already have so much trust and so much like communication.
Yeah.
Just period.
Yeah, totally. Well, and I think we're also, I mean, I think being the three of us, we're also, it's nice to be in the mindset and know that the other two are in the mindset of like being receptive to stuff. You know, it's like if having that relationship to be like, this isn't working or this is going to work really well or this is great. You know, being able to do that is something that I think is hard to find on any set without, you know, whether it's one director or or more than one. And I think collaboration is just really important to me on pretty much any project, and making sure that everybody is equally open to that stuff is really good. As long as you're not, you know, micromanaging or telling people how to do their jobs, you know, you want to get to the point where you trust everybody on set to do the thing that they're supposed to do, but that also like you can talk about it and everybody is invested enough that they're going to want to talk about it and be flexible and stuff.
And you guys have also like on the organic side, I understand, or the sort of like more original side, it seems like that makes sense how you sort of like look for those jobs.
Right.
On a branded side, you guys also have had a couple of different like production reps.
Yeah.
Is that right?
Yeah. And it's reasonably similar to like an agent actor relationship. I mean, it's an executive producer who ends up kind of pitching us to a client or an agency.
Well, so walk me through that experience for you guys as a trio. It's also different because you're a trio. So like, how do you go about like one sort of like landing inside of that environment? Mm-hmm. And then two, what is the relationship there towards, you know, finding and securing and executing work?
Right. Well, we kind of got into that position in a kind of roundabout way, but it was one of those things looking back, I guess it kind of made sense. We had been doing, like I said, kind of these branded things for one-off things for agencies who'd worked with us before. And there were a couple different companies who, you know, every 6 months or so they'd call us up and say, hey, you know, this budget is too low for a real production company. Can you do it for us? And stuff like that. And like the client really wants it to look like a comedy sketch, so we want it to look like that. And so we had a few things like that that we were doing. And and that ended up that there was a directing team, Vince and Josh, who had moved to LA, and they vacated their position at this this production company, who we then sort of took their spot as the sketch comedy guys. They had their fashion guys and their beauty guys and their food guys, and we were their comedy guys, and so that was sort of our first entry into that. And we were there for a couple of years. And then the executive producer moved to a new company, and we went along with her. So that's been good. And it was the kind of thing where, you know, I don't know. I've talked to people a lot about sort of how that happened or why that happened. I don't really know why, you know, how we got to a position where we were getting asked to do other people's branded stuff. It was it sort of feels like an accident a little bit, but I think it was just that we were sort of in a place where we were, you know, I think what the advertising world is always interested in is emulating kind of what is going on in the, whether it's the film space, TV space, the comedy space or whatever. Yeah. And so being able to do both of those things and be able to understand what that world needs while still having actual real world experience in comedy, I think was really valuable to them. And I don't really know if it would have happened in that same way if it hadn't happened in that exact way. But it was lucky for us. So now we're with this company, and you know, they have a handful of directors, and so when they have creative come across that they think we're right for it, they'll say, look, these are your guys. They don't have, you know, I don't think we're ever up against anybody else at that same company. I think it's usually that they put us forward as the representatives for that company, as opposed to like, you know, that in that way, it's not quite the same as an agency.
So you become part of what essentially like their bid as a production company looks like.
Yeah,
sort of like worked into the package of like go with us. This is sort of like how it'll run. And these are the folks who are the makers who are going to sort of like see it through creatively.
Right, exactly. Like it's they're basically, I mean, I think of it as a similar relationship to an agent and actor. But really, I think more what it is like you said, they're saying these are our guys. This is our team that we've put together for you, as opposed to check these guys out. You know, I think they're bidding us as their representatives of this company.
And you're also, but then once once that business is secured and you're part of that package, though, as you said, you're not responsible for full soup to nuts production. You're walking into it as a directing team. Mm-hmm. Working with, I assume, people inside of that production company.
Sort of. I mean, it depends from project to project. Mm-hmm. I mean, usually we've been working with them for long enough that we, you know, when we book a job, we have a chance to crew up as much as we want.
Sure.
It's just a lot of the nuts and bolts stuff of, you know, securing locations and, putting together castings and, hiring PAs and renting vans and stuff. I mean, those are the kinds of things that we don't have to worry about, which is nice. So they have, you know, there's a line producer that's working for us. But in terms of, it's nice because we're still connected with all of those decisions. We just don't end up having to make every last one of them all the time.
And also, you don't have to funnel it through your company,
right?
Which makes it logistically
right.
a little bit more
well, and
fluid
not having,
for you
not having, to, deal
having
with,
to deal with that stuff.
Right, and not having to deal with working out the budget and then sticking to the budget and all of that stuff, deciding where all the money is going is kind of nice. I mean, and there's projects where, you know, it's like you wish that they had done something differently.
Sure.
And we're not always involved in the conversation on that. But usually, all the line producers we've worked with have been awesome. And so it usually is pretty possible. If we want to get real granular and say like, hey, you know, what have we got for this department? Let's move it around. They're usually pretty open to that.
Yeah. I mean, it seems like that's just good communication, but it also is like a matter of that's not necessarily where where the buck needs to stop with you guys because you're focused on the delivery of that end of the creative packaging.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. And it's, you know, it depends from job to job. There are people who really trust us to just, you know, bring the best thing to the table. Mm-hmm. But of course, with advertising, there's so many steps above you that only one guy has to be afraid of what you're trying to do or think it's stupid or think that it's risky or whatever. To put the kibosh on everything.
And you mentioned this a while ago to me, and it always stuck with me, that you guys have a method where you sort of like bring some of the jokes that they killed on set.
I mean, that's a sort of underhanded way of thinking about it, but I guess that's sort of true. Yeah, I mean, it's nice because one of the things we always pitch, and I think if we book a job, I think it's partially because of this, is we can say, look, we're going to, in addition to this traditional casting, we're going to bring 20 people who we know are going to kill this because we've worked with them for a decade at UCB. Yeah. And we know that not only can they perform, but also they can generate content that's going to be good. We can give you a bunch of alts at the end of the scene that you can throw in as a little button to the end of whatever. And of course, when you've got the angle up and everything's fine – and if you have an extra 30 seconds to throw in an extra joke, it's like, well, now it's the editor's problem to figure out how to sell this if they think it's funnier.
Well, it seems really smart because there is so much of advertising work that feels like it's about, trying to make sure that everybody in that chain is happy.
Yeah.
And that often means being safe.
Right. Totally.
In the sort of like scripting and pre-pro process.
Right.
But then once they're in the edit, they're like, where's the recklessness, man?
Yeah,
where's
exactly.
the big swings?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly.
Where's all the crazy?
Right. Well, and a lot of the time you get people who are like, you know, they'll see something that is very clearly, they'll be like, we want this to be like, you hear it all the time, like, oh, we want this spot to be like something that Tim and Eric would make. And it's like, no, you don't. That's the absolute last thing you want.
They want something that Tim and Eric would make. For them.
For them. And have no creative input on. It's like what they mean is I want someone to think it's weird.
Yeah.
And that's – but also still buy the thing that I'm selling. But it's so funny because they – you know, we hear stuff like that all the time. It's like, we love Eric Andre. It's like, no, you don't. You do not – Coca-Cola does not love Eric Andre. that's not.
They might love him. They don't necessarily want.
Sure, they don't love him as a. They would never
as
have
a brand
him be a
ambassador.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. yeah, but it's like. You know, that stuff is always thrown around. And that's one of the things that I think is always really great about being in the comedy community is even when I see stuff at UCB that is like bizarre or like gut, you know, stomach churning or offensive or gross or not funny, I'm always like, this is the couture of like pop culture, what we're doing. Like, it's stuff that you're like, you can't wear that. No one would wear that.
Yeah.
But you're like, no, but that's really that's the direction. It pushes the edges a little bit so the middle is further into what is good. And like, there's something that is, it's kind of fun about doing that as a director of being like, you know, this thing we shot last week had Nate Smith in it. And Nate is one of the funniest dudes in the world. He's so funny.
He's great.
But they want him to be like, you know, all of his stuff is so straightforward. It's, you know, it plays into what Nate is like when you first, like what you think of when you see a picture of Nate.
Sure.
It's like, oh, here's this like Bradley Cooper dude who's just like straight down the middle, kind of bro-y, kind of a Wall Street guy.
Yeah.
And he's not like that at all, but he can do that. And so like, I think that's why we work so well with him is because, you know, we'll throw him something and he'll give it to us. And then the client like loses their shit. They love it. And then you can see them like, how do we work that in? That's so funny.
Yeah.
You know, and it's all just because Nate is just naturally like that. But they're writing scripts to what he looks like.
Yeah.
And of course, he's been doing this job for a while now.
He knows that game.
Yeah. And you know, they trust him. They like him. And, you know, obviously we're not the first people to get like, you know, really great stuff out of him for this commercial, this campaign.
Sure.
He's been doing it for a long time. But I think that's one of the things that, you know, that's when it's the best is when you can say, look, you guys are all laughing right now. All of you guys are laughing. And like, just imagine if we kept that feeling in the final product.
Sure.
And sometimes it does and sometimes it doesn't.
I mean, it's definitely like a really, like I remember when you told me that, I was like, that's such a smart way to think about it. Like bringing some of that stuff in that's like, it's going to make you look, and if there's a problem, it also makes you look really smart to like have some answers there.
Yeah.
Why walk in with just what is the sort of like approved piece of paper?
Yeah.
Walk in with the things that you genuinely feel are going to help or make something funnier, or like just give options so that later when that person in the chain says this thing is too safe or this thing is not funny enough, you have things that you can bring in.
Well, and totally. And I think there's also one of the things we kind of have probably learned the hard way at some point is that we don't try to go to the mat for anything too early in the process.
Sure.
You know, it's like if something is not working at all and we push back a little bit and we know they're not receptive to it, it's like, well, then we'll show them what was maybe going to work a little better on set, and we won't try to
fight
with them before we even get on set, because they're obviously not seeing what the problem is.
Sure.
I mean, I think that's one of the things, and actually it's kind of nice because the three of us, I think that's one of the really, you know, now that you mention it, one of the advantages of working with three of us is that one of us is always able to keep a cool head.
Yeah.
And there are times when I've been so furious at things that I'm like, why don't you understand this is going to work? And then, you know, either Justin or Bobby is like, relax, it'll be fine.
Yeah.
But then there's the time when I'm that guy, you know, so it's kind of cool that there's, I think I would probably it would probably be a lot more frustrating if it was something that I was doing in some of these situations by myself.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's a collaborative art form, right?
Yeah.
And hopefully if your team is sort of like rowing the boat in the same direction, you got people to balance that out.
Yeah.
Right?
You know, I think that there's something about, you know, and whether or not this is just lip service for clients, I think it's actually true, is that like having the, you know, especially in branded stuff, everybody wants UCB people. Everybody wants people who know how to improvise and know how to do their own thing. And I think that us pitching ourselves as that, but for the director's side, is nice, because I think it really does, it's an air of collaboration and spontaneity on set that I think is really attractive to people that a lot of people aren't offering. So I think it's nice for us to have that. And whether or not it actually translates into like a more spontaneous set or like better stuff in the end, I don't know, honestly. But there's something about, you know, if it's a single director, you can't have one director just like constantly pitching jokes like into the ether. Whereas like if there are two directors and we're joking around between takes, or three directors, then that it's an easy way for us to have just a little bit more of an active voice in the room.
Sure.
Rather than, you know, if it's just me, you know, joking around with the client between takes and being like, is that funny? Do you like that?
Right.
Whereas, like, they can overhear us and be like, do that.
It also, that actually feels like it connects back to your acting sort of background, too, because some of that feels like it's partially like, yeah, you're working it out, but you're working out through the, that's a little bit of like a performance that you're describing.
A little bit. I mean,
you're improvising.
Right. I mean, I guess I don't really think about it like that on set. Like, I haven't really thought about it that way until I just said it. But I do think that there is, you know, it's like, you know, anybody who has hung out with Justin Tyler knows, like, he's always just making jokes about stuff. Yeah. He's always one-upping everything. And, like, so to hear him do that on set in a way that he's not one-upping a client or a random person on set or one of the talent.
Yeah.
It's, you know, people are witnessing him do that with the other director, the other directors, and kind of like getting that, you know, generating that kind of stuff. I don't know. I think I guess I don't think of it as a performance because it's certainly not. I don't feel like I'm on when I'm you know, directing. I'm just doing what I'm doing. But I think it probably is a softer way of pitching that kind of stuff, maybe than it would be if I was on set and I was like, you know, what'd be funny is this thing, and now I have to walk over to Video Village and be like, I have an idea for a joke.
Sure. No, that makes sense. I mean, I guess I think of most circumstances in life as a performance. That's just my mentality. My wife always got mad at me because she was so nervous before a wedding. And I was like, it's just a show. We set up the show.
Like,
we got the runner's show.
That.
We go out there. We do it. It'll be done by tonight. You know what I mean?
It's a one-off.
She was like, that is really cynical.
Yeah, you're a sociopath.
But I just think of it because it's like there's an element of the process that, like, and you were saying it before, there's a role that clients, especially in an advertising space, expect a director to sort of like fulfill.
Yeah. Yeah.
And part of like what you're doing there is you're working through the process, but it's somewhat on behalf of getting somebody on board with like with what you're trying to do to make the work better.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, maybe I'm a sociopath, but I think that's why I think about it that way. It's you're like, let's get on board here. Let's go through a process. And it feels like some of that performance background and writing background that you have is applicable in that sense.
Totally.
Because you're...
Well, it's definitely a writing process. I mean, there's definitely a writing process that... And an improv, you know, it definitely resembles writing and improv in that sense for sure.
Yeah.
I guess it's more that I don't think of it as being something that we're doing hoping that the client will overhear us and like plug into the thing. But I mean, it does give it gives me a real sense of agency and leverage in a way to go over to talk to a client and be like, Justin and I were talking, we think this is really going to be funny.
Yeah.
Or like, Bobby pitched this idea and I think it's great. Because it's still coming from the director, but it's coming from someone else. So
it's
there's
validated.
This, well, yeah, and there's this little bit of middleman where I'm like, you don't have to, like, what do you think about this? Like, I'm offering this idea, but it's, they know that there's two other people who are on board with this idea already, and they're the directors. So they, I don't know, it just kind of, I feel like in a commercial space, it evens the playing field a little bit more. Because a lot of the time there'll be, you know, four people from the agency and four people from the client on set, and you don't have... any leverage, you know, and like, you know, maybe they like you, maybe it'll work out great, but it is a little bit more David and Goliath in that way.
Sure. Strength in numbers.
Sure.
Sounds good, man.
Yeah.
Well, thanks for taking time for doing this. This is,
absolutely.
I think, really helpful for folks. And
I hope so.
And the IFC thing is going to come out soon, or do you know when that's coming out? Is that the next thing you got lined up that's like originals?
We're all delivered. Yeah, that show is called Neurotica. It's really funny. Jenny Jaffe did a really good job with it, and the cast is great. And I think that's coming out in the spring or summer. But
and that's Comedy Crib?
Comedy Crib, yeah.
Right.
Yep. And six episodes, very good. So that's on its way. And I'm excited for people to see it. It's fun to do something that is kind of, you know, a happy medium between us doing everything from scratch and us doing something that's not our job at all, you know, like it's that's not our creative at all. It was nice to have Jenny's like great stuff and us, you know, being able to do that justice but not, you know, not have it be, it really felt like, oh, we got hired as directors, which was cool,
That's great.
For something narrative, which I think is actually pretty rare for a lot of the stuff we do.
Is that something that you guys are looking to like do more of, or are you guys pretty happy in the branded space?
Yeah, I think it would be great. I'm not sure how the other guys feel, but I think, you know, working on narrative stuff, working on comedy stuff is always like, we'll always take that stuff over, you know, some of the stuff that feels more kind of day jobby. So, I'm happy to have been asked for that. That was great. It would be great if it became something that we continued to do.
Cool.
Yeah.
Thank you, man. Well, Neurotica and IFC, check them out at Jetpacks Go. Alden, thanks for doing this.
Thanks, Nate. Appreciate it.
And that will do it for episode number 45 of this podcast. Thanks so much to Alden for sitting down and having a conversation and drinking a beer with me. You can check out Neurotica on IFC's Comedy Crib. It's not out as of this recording, but coming out soon, and really excited to see the fruits of that labor. And check in with Jetpacks Go, who are all over the interwebs as well. Thanks to the Bronx Brewery for being the official house beer of the UCB Comedy Podcast Network. Go to thebronxbrewery.com for information on all of their craft beers. And thanks to you out there for listening and subscribing and coming back and creating community with us. We hope you enjoy this show. We hope it's beneficial to your work as a filmmaker and a comedian. And if it is, we hope you'll share this show with a friend, spread it around, and give us a subscribe on itunes.com/UCB Comedy, where new episodes come out every single Tuesday until death do us part. Thank you, Ben Hosley, for being a great producer here, and all the best in the future with your future endeavors. We hope you'll come back and visit us and check in with the Career Tracker sometime soon as well. Follow UCB Comedy all over the social media at UCB Comedy, Vimeo, YouTube videos coming out all the time. We got some cool Facebook Live content headed your way at facebook.com/UCB Comedy as well. And we've got content across all those different social media platforms. You know them all at UCB Comedy. Thanks for tuning in. We'll see you next week. And until next time, y'all, we'll see you on the internet.
This has been a UCB Comedy production. Check out our other shows on the UCB Comedy Podcast Network.